Okey-doke. So I'll make a start with the talk. So let's see. The name of this particular talk might be the path you are going in life, the path you are taking in life. For most of you guys, it's usually for better, you know, more for better than worse. So what I'll do is I'll slow my speech right down. It's not like I think that you guys are potatoes or anything, but people have mentioned it to me before. So when one looks at one's human experience. From, you know, like in the current life, from the time one is born, as one grows up, becomes a teenager, you know, child, teenager, young adult, middle age, onwards. And when you look at the personal karma, which is directing the course of one's life, which is very, very complicated. Because, you know, when you look at this, when you look at, say, the big picture, and you look at the nature of this earth, the size of the planet, and the number of, say, human beings, the number of animal species, the different realms of existence, and, you know, all these different combinations where every single individual can be reborn in any one, place, any one spot in time and location, you know, to specific parents and family and, any particular country of the world. And some of us have a mix of very interesting characteristics. You know, you can be a person with very, very strong, Buddhist inclinations, and you can be reborn, in England, which is largely Catholicism. You can be reborn in Australia, which is largely Catholicism. When you look at the different religious groups and their representation in general society. So, you know, what are the forces and energies which bring us to this point? You know, very, very specific points in, say, time and location. And so, you know, a person's personal karma is, you know, incredibly complicated. And only the Buddha himself, and only the Buddha, could know and understand the full complexities of karma of every single person at any time or location. Whether it was in, say, the human realm, or within, like the animal realm, or Devaloka, Brahmaloka, you know, any particular realm of existence. And that comes from the Buddha's, full range of supernormal attainments, supernormal powers or abilities. On the psychic, clairvoyant, and, you know, like we're talking about, you know, like super intuitive. We're not talking about, oh, like I feel this way about this or that. You know, it's like real, solid, clear, full knowledge and understanding of a person's life and their connections with. Within family and when very, very heavy, amazing life events take place, or absolutely overwhelming tragedies occur in that person's life. And so the Buddha, just alone, not even his two leading disciples, Sariputta or Moggallana, and Moggallana was only second to the Buddha in supernormal psychic attainments. So Sariputta was only second to the Buddha in wisdom, and Moggallana was only second to the Buddha in supernormal psychic attainment. So when you look at your life experience as a human being and the path that you are currently taking at present, so you know, every single one of us, every human being, every animal, every species of within the animal kingdom, you know, every single being right throughout this cosmos, this universe, is a conditioned entity. So, you know, all the different facets of your personality, your characteristics, your likes, dislikes, your preferences, your ideals, your loves and hates and aspirations, it all comes from this process of conditioned phenomena. And the reason that is the case, and it's a unrefutable and synopsis on my from my perspective is that, you know, where else can it come from? You know, the Buddha drew attention to this over and over and over again in the sutras of the Theravadan tradition, and naturally you see that in Mahayana and the Tibetan schools and Zen and Chan, that we are conditioned beings living our lives in this world, you know, and other worlds in the past, other worlds in the upcoming future. And, you know, because, I mean, where else do you get these preferences from? You know, where else do you get these personality traits? You know, it's got to come from somewhere. And people think, well, you know, some people say things like, oh, you know, like I truly believe that I have free will, that I can make, you know, all these choices for better, for worse. I can direct the course of my life. I can choose my friends. I can choose my profession. You know, I can move in a certain direction, even on a physical level. You know, I can choose to go live, you know, in another country within the next 3 months. You know, there's certain countries you definitely will be restricted on, but I had a young man tell me that just recently. He was heading off to Canada within the next 3 months to live permanently. So we have choices and we have a degree of control and power in the direction of our life and in the quality of our life experience to a degree. You know, you are limited by one's physical health, by one's financial resources, by one's support or networking ability. You know, the vast majority of you guys. You know, you have contacts in other countries, and it's not difficult. It's not difficult for you to make new friends and to you know, to come to arrangements with people in America, in Brazil, other parts of Central America, almost any, you know, and within limits, almost anywhere in the world that you would like to travel. And you can do the same for other people. You can go and visit your friends online, and naturally you repay the favor. If they look after you, you look after them, and you have this congenial arrangement where you could travel the world, and you know, people will help you, support you to a degree, and you do the same for them when they come to stay with you here in Australia. So, you know, you have, say, personal qualities, attributes, support, opportunities, which will give you the ability to do certain things and go places and access, you know, potentially, you know, say the best private schools and universities, say in Perth, or, you know, maybe even overseas. You know, if your father is very wealthy, your parents are very wealthy and powerful, you know, and they have contacts in England, they have contacts in America, you know, if you've got enough money and power, you know, you can open doors for your children for educational or financial opportunities. You know, with this one particular lady who comes to mind, who comes from a good quality middle class background in Bangkok, and both her daughters have good qualities in, and at least one of the daughters has good quality education in the US and is within, like high level banking fraternity in Bangkok. But I'm absolutely sure the second daughter is on a similar profile, and actually, you know, like, parents tend to project their own makeup on their sons and daughters. You know, we are like projections of mum and dad to a degree, for better or maybe even potentially for worse, you know, unfortunately. But, you know, but in essence, that our life experience is made up of thousands, you know, your current daily experience, you know, like your moment to moment, minute to minute experience, you know, is shaped and formed and conditioned by thousands and thousands and thousands of karmic events from past lives, from the last life and this life. Especially the last life has a significant power and influence over shaping the the quality and the direction of one's current experience. So, you know, you are definitely going to have a degree of power and influence in the direction that you choose to take in one's life. But the underlying forces and energies and karma, which is at work on a deeper level in the mind, is not necessarily within your circle of awareness. there are things which are on a much deeper level within the mind that you are not necessarily aware of to any great degree whatsoever. You know, the vast majority of us do not have full awareness of the underlying dynamics which are responsible for the way you walk and talk as a human being in your current existence. So as we move in this particular direction of one's life, there are thousands of potentials. There are thousands of choices that you can make. But these choices that you have, say at your fingertips, you know, to a degree, or you have the potential to manifest, you know, could even be, you know, you're working towards a particular goal. You know, it could be 3 months, could be 12 months, excuse me, could be 5 or 10 years, but it all depends on the power of one's mind, one's personal ambition and drive, which will determine whether you will reach the goal of one's aspiration. And so the dynamics that we see, the choices you make, there could be hundreds of choices, 1,000 choices that you make in the next 12 months. And they could be potentially conditioned by 100,000. And I'm not like exaggerating when I say this, but potentially this can be the case. You could have 1 million causal factors, easily 1 million causal factors from the past life and lives previous to that, which are shaping the choices and the preferences that you follow or aspire to in one's, one's current experience. So you're looking at this vast field of karma, which is of past actions, you know, the accurate definition of personal karma is actions, say physical actions of body and speech, and mental actions of say thought, intention or volition. So these karmas, in essence, this past karma is working through you, through your body and mind. It's unfolding and rising up to one's surface, the surface level of the mind, and it will determine the physical health of one's body. And for example, even pharmaceutical drugs can bring about unforeseen side effects in the body, you know, over 10, 15, even 20 years, you know, it can There are certain substances, certain compounds which can physically damage the body over long periods of time that we don't necessarily see quite early in life. And so, one's personal karma is working through one's body and mind. And why is that the case? Why do I have to meet, why do I have to be reborn in a family with abusive parents? Why do I have, for example, a father who's illiterate, can't read and write, and is a drinker, and one's mother, who has schizophrenia, and suffers from, manic, depressive illness, and runs like when this person has mania, basically gives away, all your money, all the money in the household, gives away all one's the family's personal possessions when they're when they're running, say in a state of elation, and you're in a situation. So from 12 years of age, from the time you had enough schooling to read and write, you had to essentially look after and watch over one's parents and take responsibility for bills, for bank accounts, for household running of the household, all this kind of stuff that all you guys are familiar with. And your parents, your mother and father, you're 12 years of age, and you're 12 and 13, and your mother and father are like your own children. You actually have to support and look after them. And it's quite possible that your mother and father from that current life could have been your children previously, because in this life you're 12, 13 years of age, and you have to look after mum and dad till the day you leave home and get married at 21 years of age. And then you have a partner who has a condition, a long-term chronic tradition, condition, which is very, very, which is very, very tricky and difficult to manage. And, that person, one's partner, without you there watching over and protecting them, they would have been dead a dozen times over before age 30. So, this is just one family. So every single one of us know, people, know families who have very, very, tricky and complicated scenarios. But you think to yourself, why couldn't I have just a reasonably pleasant life? I just want a normal, happy, healthy lifestyle. Why do I have to be subjected to this kind of stuff? Why do I have to be responsible for this kind of relationships, interactions with family and even friends and whatnot? Why can't I just have a reasonably happy, healthy human lifestyle? So, every single one of us, you get some people in the human realm where it's just a breeze. You know, from the time they are born into wealthy, affluent families, and they have all the opportunities that a person could need for for good parenting, for good quality education, for financial support, for high class material acquisitions, it could be anything. It could be nice cars. You know, I remember that there was one family in America who lived in the Beverly Hills area, and both sons were call it like senior high school students. You know, they had their driving licenses, and both these young teenage men had three cars apiece, and because Dad was a multi-millionaire, and just little things like that, and a nice home and good quality education and all sorts of different opportunities that kind of lifestyle can provide. But unfortunately, they made some very, very bad decisions, and both those guys ended up on multiple murder charges, and I don't know whether they died in, I think potentially they might have died in prison. It was a story my father passed on to me. But all of us, we have this incredible mix of experiences, both pleasant and unpleasant. And you think to yourself, well, it's like, in a sense, it's like grist for the mill. The vast majority of us, we like to have, meaningful, pleasant experiences, rewarding, joyful, not necessarily blissful. There are definitely occasions where some of you guys will be blissed out, and so we run this whole spectrum of painful to absolute incredible states of happiness, fulfillment, contentment. We run the full range of thousands and thousands of human emotions. And as one very high-ranking clairvoyant in Sydney told me when she was alive, she was about, when I saw her, she was about 70. She must have, I'd be amazed if she was still alive, but she had, incredible psychic ability. And, from a very, very young age, and then later, when her own daughter was the same age and had contact with Tibetan lamas in Sydney, that she had the opportunity to develop this psychic ability to support and help others. But with every single one of us, we run this vast range of feelings and moods and states of mind. And for people who have an understanding and awareness of principles within Buddhism, and have a basic understanding of Buddhism, and even meditation, because meditation brings insight, that we use this experience as grist for the meal. So even if you meet the most incredible person, and that person absolutely breaks your heart to the point where you just feel like you want to die, that experience, as painful as it is, is something which is very, very useful to you. So, you know, so whether it's just the experiences are just incredible, or whether they are the absolute pits as far as, you know, the kind of bad stuff that people can experience, that all these experiences, for better or worse, it's all grist for the mill. It's all raw material for your insight practice. And every single one of you who are meditators, and even those people who only meditate for 5 minutes a day, even 5 minutes a day is going to bring you a degree of insight. And so, you know, so essentially, you know, you can't lose. Even if you think that you are, your meditation practice is hopeless, that every single minute that you focus and sustain attention, you know, that's going to be 1 minute's worth of insight, which is going to arise at some point, either in the day or some point in the future. And this human experience is going to really, there's a number of benefits to meditation and insight, and for the vast majority of us who practice, that, you know, many of us are interested in peace of mind and understanding, you know, wisdom. Understanding the nature of the human mind, the physical body, you know, the nature of life, and the universe. And many of the religions, the major religions of the world, are geared for that purpose, a higher purpose to attain rebirth, in heaven, to, you know, I mean, you know, you look at Catholicism, Hinduism, Judaism, and Islam are geared and directed for the attainment of rebirth in heaven. And it's Buddhism which is aiming at transcending all worlds. You know, every single one of us has the potential to attain rebirth in a heaven world for incredibly long periods of time. The last time I checked from the sutras, it was something like 9.7 million years, the full lifespan of the lowest Devaloka realm, which is just one realm above the human world. And so any of you who are really committed with Dharma practice, you know, I could easily say this, and this is being realistically based. Any of you, if you really put forth effort, could attain the first stage of enlightenment easily, without difficulty, without, you know, you're looking at incredible periods of time. You know, even if a person was reborn for 100,000 years in these Devaloka realms, you know, it's this first Devaloka realm of the four great kings, you know, I could absolutely believe unequivocally, if a person put forth effort in the right direction with their foundation principles of the practice, that they should be able to at least break through to the Sotapanna level with ease. You know, not struggling, you know, something which, you know, I could firmly believe is attainable. And that's, you know, I mean, because, I mean, the human, especially modern human society with the level of technology and the toys and the gadgets and the speed and the responsibility and the duties and the complexity, it's very difficult, very, very difficult for people to get enlightened in modern society unless you have incredible, absolutely top-ranked, incredible spiritual parami. You're like a saint who walks the earth. It's that, that's the kind of person you are. And if you're a person in that category, you're not going to waste your time in general society. You know, you're going to join a spiritual community, you'll go and ordain, and you will commit your life to spiritual practice. And if you're highly developed, you will move towards the development of the Buddhist practice. You know, the Buddhist practice is a full, comprehensive understanding of reality. It's not a limited perspective on rebirth. You know, Christian, you know, my best friend is Christian, and I would trust that guy. I would virtually trust him with my very life. I've known him since I was 12. But the Christian, within Christianity, Judaism, Islam, Hinduism, your understanding will extend so far. But in Buddhism, one's understanding extends all the way. It's almost limitless. There's a sutta that the Buddha explained this particular principle. He was teaching the monks. All of you may be aware of this, the vast majority of you, where the Buddha held up a handful of leaves and he said to the monks, this is just common sense stuff. You know, what do you think is greater, the leaves that I hold in my hand or the leaves that you see in this forest in front of you? And, you know, common sense, the Buddha, the monk said, who were being taught by the Buddha, Bhante, the leaves that you hold in your hand are much less, are just minuscule. Don't compare with this great forest we have standing in front of us. And he said, what are the right words? He said, as in comparison, what I have told you, what I have taught you, you know, we're talking about a volume of sutras and say kindred sayings of the arahants, bhikkhus, bhikkhunis. There's a number of volumes there, and the volumes are like this. You put them end to end, they're like this. And the Buddha said, what I have taught you is equivalent to the leaves that I hold in my hand compared to the full knowledge, the full, deep, profound, intuitive knowledge of this universe. That is equivalent to the leaves that you see in this great forest in front of you. And the reason why I don't teach you this vast storehouse of knowledge and understanding, which is right before your very eyes, is it is something which will not lead you directly to the goal, directly to the attainment of enlightenment. He said, what I teach is the experience of suffering on an ultimate level. You know, this is as a being in this universe, this vast universe, the experience of suffering, the cause, the path, and the extinction of suffering or unsatisfactoriness. And the Buddha said, the reason why I teach you the Four Noble Truths is this is the direct path, the straight path to the realization of Nibbana, to the realization of the ultimate nature of this vast universe that you have been reborn into. So, you know, there's no escape from karma and rebirth unless you have realized these Four Noble Truths at the four levels of enlightenment. And for the, say, the first person who attains the Sotapanna level, you are absolutely, it's a foolproof experience. You have a maximum. Even if you put your feet up and do absolutely nothing, you know, no spiritual practice at all, your karma cannot extend beyond seven full lifetimes. This is a truth. This is a natural truth. You can't go beyond seven lifetimes, regardless, no matter who you are, where you are, how smart or what faculties, how incredible your faculty is, how dumb you are. You can't go beyond seven lifetimes. This is a law, a natural principle of cosmic law. And the person at the highest level has completely finished, has completely brought the Buddhist path to full realization and brought the Buddhist path to a complete end completely. There is nothing left to do. You have full realization of ultimate truth. You know, many, many people have supernormal psychic attainments. You know, they have all sorts of call it, so you have the wisdom. The wisdom faculty will extend to, you know, the realization of the Four Noble Truths. All people who attain Dhamma, who attain enlightenment, experience the Four Noble Truths, and it's exactly the same for all beings. But the powers which follow on after the attainment are not the same for each person at all four levels. Some people, even at the Sotapanna level, do not have pronounced psychic ability. But some have significant psychic potential. It's something that which can be natural to you. It's something that you can intentionally develop. And, you know, that you can have certain, you know, each person at each person who's attained the four level will have a mix of qualities. The wisdom faculty will extend so far. The ability to teach others will extend so far. One's personal makeup, the personality, the flexibility. You know, even like give you an idea. There was supposedly, this is a story from the Thai forest tradition. There was a particular teacher who was fully enlightened, but unfortunately, his personality, his interpersonal skills weren't that fantastic. He was very much very, very reclusive. He didn't like to talk too much. He was a bit gruff, a bit dismissive. He was the kind of person who would definitely support and help others, but you know, he wasn't a crowd pleaser. He wasn't the kind of person who wanted dozens and dozens of people coming around to the monastery on a daily basis. And supposedly what this individual did, this monk, was that he spent most of his spare time fixing the motorcycles and the mopeds of the local villagers. And some of the local villagers, I mean, they thought that he was a what would you call it? I mean, not a complete idiot, but they thought you're an abbot of a monastery. You don't like to spend time with people. You don't like to teach. You don't like to spend much time teaching at all. But you're quite happy to fix people's motorcycles and mopeds and even people's bicycles. So they thought that this particular senior monk was a maybe like a little bit. I wouldn't say like a little bit of a clown might be too strong a statement, but he wasn't a person they found like incredibly inspiring. He was a person, you know, who really did not want excessive attention from other human beings. He just wanted to, you know, just to do his daily, you know, get about his daily business, just look after things, look after people in what small ways that he could. But he was just very reclusive. He just didn't want to hang out with other people for hours on end, which is what many of the forest masters had to do or ended up doing eventually. So when you look at the course of one's life, every single one of us have, you know, a completely different life experience, you know, from day to day, from month to month. And, you know, your personal, your karma, your personal karma can potentially just take you all over the world. You know, depending what kind of person you are, you could easily meet, you know, like through the course of one's life, you know, 1,000, 10,000 people. As one journeys through one's human experience. But the crucial point, the bottom line is, for better or worse, that you develop and sharpen your wisdom faculty, you develop and understand the full factors of the path. And you really put emphasis on the quality of your meditation and insight, and you develop your wisdom faculty to its highest degree, because of all your personal qualities personal qualities or attributes, this one is the most important. And this one has the most power to take you much higher in the process of rebirth, where you are going to live for incredibly long periods of time, which will give you the potential to essentially break through and realize the Dhamma that the Buddha taught while he was alive. Because essentially, you know, it's all very nice to have fun in the world and have different experiences. It can certainly be tangible and meaningful and have value. So whichever way you choose to go, whichever direction you wish to take in life, the crucial point is that sila, samadhi, panya. But in essence, the peak of the period, the wisdom faculty is the most important thing to keep in mind in the long term. It has a real power behind it to take you be very, very high in the rebirth process, and to give you the time and the potential to really develop oneself, because even in these Devaloka realms, these Brahmaloka realms, which are the realms for people with incredibly profound meditation, the Brahmaloka, that you have this, you have an even, from my perspective, my opinion, you have an even greater potential to realize enlightenment from those worlds. The human life, human birth is very fragile. You know, almost anything can happen. You know, we don't live very long. Most of us won't see, you know, if we're lucky, 80, 90 years of age. Even the best of, you know, people who attain 95, 100 years of age, you know, they've got really, you know, the supportive karma is very, very, I mean, it's very, very strong. And, you know, one, you know, aiming for a rebirth in these especially the Devaloka realms, you know, which are much happier worlds. You know, you really have to be focused and essentially know exactly what you want to do with the time you have. You know, human realm, it's really not a safe, predictable place to be. You know, almost anything can happen. But the Devaloka realms, you know, it's got real potential when it comes to the realization of Dharma and the attainment, the real development and attainment of the path. So I'll finish it there, finish the talk, and open the floor to questions if anyone wants to challenge, to say anything amazing. And we have some charming, delightful questions, I hope. Or maybe some challenging questions. Questions from Germany. How do my subconscious and my mind relate? Can I give peace to this experience? It seems I am calm on my awareness, but feel tense underneath. Why? I get that as well on a regular basis. I can be quite peaceful, but you know, you can feel physical, you know, excess energy in the body. Even the mind can be peaceful. You can still be restless. You know, you're looking at multiple factors. So your subconscious, to be specific. Your subconscious is that area of your mind. So your subconscious is that area of your mind which is deeper down. You don't have full awareness, full understanding what's happening there. Your conscious level, you think and feel, you're aware, you have sensory awareness. But your subconscious, you know, is that deeper level where you just can't see and know and understand what's happening. And that would be the major difference between the two. Subconscious, you know, it can take years and years and years. As we develop the meditation, we go deeper into the personality. We go into we go deeper into our personal karma. All these different forces and energies in the personality. You're looking at this almost like a, you know, I wouldn't call it maybe catharsis, might too strong a word, but you have to go like really deeply into the self. You know, in order to get enlightened, you've got to go into one's nature and really come to know and understand, you know, exactly what you are made of. Question from Palestine. I turn to the Dharma to help me feel less of an object through the teachings. But when, even in the sutras, women are constantly associated with sexuality, I can't help but feel objectified. It's pretty strange, I think. I think women tend to have more rights, more of an equal status in Israel. How am I supposed to deal with this and not feel aversion to the Buddha and the Dhamma? Okay, so if I put myself in this woman's shoes, how do I feel less of an object through the teachings, even in the sutras, women are constantly associated with sexuality? But unfortunately, this whole business with culture, with conditioning, with biology, reproduction, you know, people's forces and energies in the personality. You know, if you had more women in control of the media and politics and maybe even the armed forces, that they would tend to undermine and say, you know, bring a more balanced perspective. This whole business with women being associated with sexuality, from what I can see, and I'm not an expert, I'm not a a sociologist or anyone else in that category, but it's men who are largely responsible for the media projection, for the magazines and the comedy and the rude comic books and all this other stuff which associate women as sexual objects or physically attractive people. But unfortunately, a lot of this comes from the attitudes and the views and the opinions of men. But unfortunately, because a part of this, it's the biology of males. It's the reproductive biology of males. Males, as the ladies know, men are hardwired in certain ways, and I don't need to explain to any female the way, the kind of intentions and the kind of attitudes that men have. In relationships or whatnot, men have this underlying biological kind of hardwire which affects their surface behaviour. But to give you an idea, my Christian friend, who is a teacher, his wife's a teacher, his two older daughters must be at least 18, 20. And his young son, who is 13, is a very lovely boy and has a very good attitude, has a very good, has good quality relationships with his female friends and his female school friends, and has a good attitude overall because mum and dad brought him up to see girls and to see women as fellow human beings. And he's a very sensitive, very kind young man. He's not afraid to hug his mum, and he's very comfortable to share with his sisters. So his male and female energy is much more harmonious, and it's much more better. It's got a much better balance to it, and guys, you know, boys and men who have sisters tend to have a much more conducive, balance or equilibrium with their male and their male and female energies, because men are not wholly male. You know, with genes and genetics, males are partly female with their genetic, with their chromosomal makeup. You know, I don't know a lot about this business, but all of you can research this. And all females are not fully female, fully femi. You know, they have a male component to them. Okay, from Lucy. Let me think. This particular lady, Palestine. What I would do to round that off in a nutshell, if I was a female living in, and that's true. That's, it's not Israel. It's Palestine. That's a different ball game, because you're in an Arab Muslim fraternity. That's a very, very difficult one. I couldn't answer that in full detail right now. Maybe you can send me. I'll send you an email. I might be able to get you your email address, and I'll send you a long email, because it's a bit complicated, but I can answer your question in full. Okay, Lucier, question from France. Can someone else's karma overpower your karma? Can you catch somebody else's karma? Not really at all. People's karma is personal, but we have interactive personal karma. So you have your own stuff that you're working through, but you share your stuff, and you interact and you engage your stuff with other people. And so somebody else can have strong karma with you, and they can overpower your childhood. They could potentially overpower maybe a part of your life. You could have a father who's incredibly dominant, a mother who's incredibly dominant, and you know, wants you to move in a certain direction. You're the only son. They want you to be successful, and they want you to be a lawyer. They want you to be a business person. They want you to be this or that. It's not necessarily your cup of tea, but that's what they want. So they may have a degree of power and influence over you, but you have choices. You know, if you have an understanding of how these things work, even, you know, say for example, you could have people who are in very, very unconducive relationships with other people, and you have the choice. You don't have to stay with that person. You know, it may be tricky, but you know, you can walk away. You can escape from this person, especially when your life is in danger. It's a very, very wise thing to do. You have choices, and if you have enough insight and wisdom, you will make the right choices, which are beneficial to you. You can't catch someone else's karma. You can be influenced by another person's karma, but you cannot take on their stuff. You cannot take on their bad luck. It could be evil stuff from the last life. You know, you can't catch that. You can't absorb that. You can't take it on. You can't take responsibility for it. Their karma does not extend outside the sphere of their own body and mind. Their karma can interact with you and affect you, but you can't take ownership of that other person's personal stuff. Okay, so that's all the questions wrapped up. And are there any questions from the floor at all?
Gentleman in front.
Just one question. Oh, okay. Why is your clothes the colour that they are? Like that mustardy yellow. Can you explain?
This particular shade is the Gankanun colour of the Thai forest tradition. So as you'll find out quite quickly, there's a particular tree called the jackfruit tree in Thailand. I'm not sure if they have it in Sri Lanka or Burma. But what happens is the forest monks, they would chip they would cut logs from the jackfruit tree after they fall in the forest. They would chip the logs, and they would boil them in a large, like, wok, like a massive wok, at least 3 or 4 feet in diameter. And they would, after several hours of boiling the chips, you get the Gankanun dye, they would drain off the Ganganun dye and then place the dye, say, like in a tub, a plastic tub, or you place one's robe, one's main robes, one's lower robe, in a large plastic bowl, a large plastic bowl or dish arrangement, and then you would pour with a dish, because you know it's the Ganganun water, the Ganganun dye, it's really quite hot, and so you can wait for it to cool. And then you sprinkle the dye onto the robe and get the dye fully moist, you know, wet. The robes have got to be wet from top to bottom. And then you can rinse the robe in a surface layer of dye. If you had at least nothing less than, you've got to have at least absolute minimum an inch of dye in the basin at all times to get the full deodorant and cleansing effect with the Ganganun dye. Ganganun dye, it's got a very fragrant, sweet scent to it, and so every week the forest monks, that's what they do, you know, to keep, because in Asia, It's quite humid, Southeast Asia. And, you know, you have to wash these robes every 7 days, otherwise they stink. And so the Ganganun dye is very effective. And if you need to wash your robes at any time, you can use washing up liquid, which is very effective. Ganganun dye will wash out of robes over time, over many weeks, over many months. It can lose its colour over time, and but you know, you can use things like even potentially any kind of soft detergent, even things like very mild soaps, and you can make the rope. You know, you don't have to you know, the Ganganun process. It's a little bit it's time consuming, so the monks they'll make sure that they'll prepare dye, they'll do wood chips, prepare dye, they'll have a storehouse, you know, they'll have a store of chips, and then they'll wash and dye robes from possibly on a weekly basis. In Sri Lanka there's a tree which has a purple color. I'm not sure, maybe Burma they would probably have another one. I've never looked into it, but the Burmese colour, it's more of like a dark brown, from what I've seen, and so you're looking at different species of tree, but the quality of the dye, it's very effective. Okay.
Ajahn Api.
Can I say?
Eddie.
Oh. Yeah, Ajahn Api. Just now you mentioned about the Four Noble Truths and the causes.
Yep.
Yeah. You know, in Buddhism, we acknowledge the causes, you know, okay, which is the Second Noble Truth, okay, to help us solve our problem, to end the suffering, okay, yeah. Seems like the medical profession, you know, there's no regard for causes, you know, they treat the symptoms, you know. The symptoms. So there is that conflict, you know, going on, you know. Do you see what I mean?
Conflict of what?
Oh, you know, in Buddhism, we acknowledge causes, you know, causes, they have a problem.
Everything is causally based. Everything.
Yeah, you know, the Four Noble Truths, we are saying suffering and the way towards the end suffering, okay, we acknowledge that. But if you have a problem, you go to see the medical profession, they don't look at the causes. Just go to the symptom, they treat the symptom. Well, and the symptom is not always correct, isn't it? The treatment.
Well, you know, I mean, from what I see, you know the whole history with, was it A.B. Farben and the petrochemical fraternity? The whole business from World War II with the military industrial complex, the laboratories, the petrochemical industry, and then later on, you know, the pharmaceutical fraternity, medical fraternity with the machines, their drugs, you know, chemotherapy, you know, all that stuff that you know, within that, you know, that's that whole sphere. They don't want, you know, if they went for the causes, they'd be out of business already.
Mm.
You know, they cancer, heart disease, diabetes, arthritis is largely dietary related, largely. And I've studied dietetics for 10 years, and I've seen it over and over and over again in the hospital system I was working as a registered nurse. And it's so obvious. It's very easy to understand. But why would the doctors go for the causes? Because they're basically, they just end up destroying themselves financially.
Yeah.
So you put those professionals put themselves out of business.
I know that. But there is a conflict in it. This conflict is difficult, you know. There's a conflict between this cause, you know. Like in Buddhism, we believe in the causes, you know. Like, to help us solve our problems, isn't it?
Yeah, but say, for example, if the medical fraternity focuses on symptoms and effects, it's not really a problem for us as long as we know what we're doing when it comes to Dhamma, when it comes to the way we live our life. Say, for example, if I had a skin condition, you know, if you're a Buddhist person, your tendency will be to use herbal-based moisturizers, you know, herbal-based, you know, like medicines, you know, because they're biologically compatible with the nature of your skin and your blood and this and that, and so you know you can still move and function in the world with a causally based mentality, because the causally based mentality is the wisdom approach. If we're looking at causes and effects, what we're doing is we are applying principles of wisdom and insight. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah. What I mean, sometimes, you know, certain things, well, the medical thing, fair, like say, like skin thing, fair enough. But there are certain things which can be done from our own selves. You yourself know, you know. You know, we ourselves know our problem, you know. You understand or not? You see, when you see a doctor, this thing, they say it their way, you know.
They say what?
They say their way. You have to do it their way. Okay?
They are weighing.
Their way of doing things.
Their way of doing things?
Of treating it. That, okay, you know. So, you know, so being a Buddhist is thing, okay, like, it's difficult to mention. But I mean, sometimes there is a certain times there's conflict too, you find.
Not necessarily. I mean, if you know, you've got all human society is quite complicated. There's all these different dynamics going on, but the ultimate truth is, no matter who you are, like within, say, the human realm, anywhere else in the universe, that cause and effect is the law of laws. It doesn't matter if you're the most incredible surgeon or pharmacist or general practitioner or biologist or chemist in the world. It's all cause and effect is the law of laws. This is the law which underlies all the science.
Yes, but these medical people, they don't think that way. They think that their way, like through surgery, cut this, cut that, and all these things, that's what they do.
Well, you don't play that game. You basically, let me think. There are certain things you can do. To give you an example, my brother had a this clairvoyant, she told him that 20 years previously. She said, there's something on your right lower leg. And she said, it's very serious. And she said, you've got to get that checked out. And that was 20 years before it happened. And he ended up with this funny cancer spot on the right lower leg. And it was the color was bad. and it was, the thing was increasing in size, and it was abnormal. It looked abnormal. You went to the GP, specialist, oncologist, this and that, and the specialist said, to cut a long story short, he had two cancers taken out. One, he had a cancer on the shoulder, one in the mouth, and while he was in under, he was in operating theatre, was completely out. They brought him out. They got the tests back for the leg, and it had gone into the bone. And the surgeon said, Robert, he said, the cancer's aggressive. It's gone into the bone. He said, what do you want to do? And unfortunately, my brother opted for, he had the leg taken off. He's an amputee now. But we have a paste that we use in the monastery, and it would have stopped that cancer dead in its tracks. And if only he'd have told me, I would have sent it, I would have got it immediately. I would have fast-tracked it. I would have got it within 2 days. And he could have saved his leg. He was, you know, he was really athletic, this, that, and the other. And you know, so people can get really, you know, you make certain choices, decisions, and it can really stuff you up. But it's like you just have to learn, you know.
No, it's going to be a long process. I know what you mean, you know. But there are certain cases. I mean, certain cases it works their way, okay. But there are certain cases which works the causal way too, you know. Like during the Rains retreat, there's some people they spoke about their experiences, you know, like using the Dharma to help solve the problem.
Sorry.
Yeah.
This is cut it short.
Yeah, it's okay. You can always catch up with me later. But you know, you can. You cause and effect. You can live your life according to cause and effect, no matter what you're doing.
Yeah. No, what I'm trying to say, at the end of the day, when you see the physician, you have a choice. You know. How?
Oh. Yep. Go on. Keep going.
Sorry.
Yep.
There should be a recognition. For the causal thing too.
For what? For the medical fraternity?
Yes. Instead of just doing their way, you know.
No, they don't want to play that game.
Yeah.
Because it's big money.
Mm-hmm.
It's power, authority, big money.
Yep.
They don't want to go that way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, herbal medicines are so cheap by comparison. Mm-hmm. I know people who are paying thousands of dollars.
Yep.
I mean, you know, it could be $1,000 a month for these goddamn medicines, you know.
Yeah.
And sometimes the herbal substitutes, they're a fraction of the price, but they don't want you to go that way.
That's right, yeah.
Bad for business.
Yeah.
But you will get some very, very good GPs and specialists who are very comprehensive, very, very, you know. Not, they're not all the same, just that you know.
Anyway, thank you.
Bless you. Okay, can we finish up? Okay, I'll catch you guys later.